Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast for Friday, August 13th, 2010. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim, I'm not superstitious, Elliot.
Hey, good morning.
Graham, I can't think of anything Thickens.
And I'm not either.
All right. And Phil, thank you for putting the show together, Wilson.
No worries. No worries. I'm actually broadcasting from a ladder. Actually under a ladder.
Oh, just to make sure.
I have a black cat on my lap.
There you go. There you go.
And you broke the mirror.
I bring that next to a broken mirror, right?
Oh man. Well, so it's been an interesting week. Even with summertime, which is typically really really slow, there's been enough stuff going on, and I've been hearing, or from you, Graham, something about Deluxe. What's going on there?
Yeah, I got an email from my old buddy, Steve Nielsen, the founder of PartnerUp, which was acquired by Deluxe Corp. Right. What was that? 2 years ago, almost to the day.
Yeah.
So one could conclude he had a contract to stay there 2 years, and he's off doing other things with his wife, who was his trusty sidekick on that deal.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to be having a lunch with Steve to hear about what he's doing. It sounds like he's going off into investor land.
Wow.
So,
when you got a lot of loot, why not?
Well, you know, he's done two startups and sold them now.
Yep.
I mean, PartnerUp was his second. You know, this guy is a pretty amazing dude. I believe he was just graduated from Carlson in 2000. So in 10 years, he's got a pretty good record. So I want to hear what he's up to. And I guess he says that PartnerUp is humming along with Deluxe, trying to help them turn their strategy around from being a check printer, which is small task.
Yeah. What are your guys' perceptions of that? I mean, I don't really hear too much about PartnerUp. You know, again, I don't spend a lot of time with the Deluxe PartnerUp thing, but as far as, you know, hearing about their big changeovers, as far as, you know, repositioning themselves as a small business resource, is Deluxe making headway there?
I think they are. I mean, I think their quarterly results are looking pretty decent. The stock, I think, has been holding fairly well. I don't follow it daily by any stretch or at all, really. But from what I've gathered and just seeing their quarterly reports reported in the paper and so forth, this new CEO of theirs, which by the way, he was an understudy of Mark Hurd's.
At
NCR, which is kind of an interesting angle. And he's a fix-it guy like Mark Hurd, you know. And he came in, and I think he's been there 3-4 years now at least, maybe a titch longer.
And for those by the way, if I could interrupt, for those that don't know, Mark Hurd, the CEO of, former CEO of HP, who was had a dalliance going on and fudged expense reports. And I think there's more to that story, but that's the Mark Hurd connection. He was at NCR.
Wow. Dalliance and fudge in the same sentence. That's kind of interesting. Yeah.
What a guy, you know. But anyway, yeah. So back to Deluxe, though, I think they seem to be doing okay. But it's like turning a battleship, you know, big time. But they're out to own the small business market, if you will, by selling them all kinds of stuff, you know. And PartnerUp is just one aspect of that. They've made a ton of other acquisitions, and I forget what the count is now. I think they did a half dozen of them in the year after they bought PartnerUp. So, yeah. It's interesting to watch one of our big local Fortune. Well, they were at one time a Fortune 500, I think. Maybe they're still a Fortune 1000. Try to turn themselves around.
Yeah. So, how long have they've been doing this transformation?
Well, he put the strategy in place before they bought PartnerUp, but I think PartnerUp was a key linchpin in it. And, you know, I think Steve Nielsen, I think they found him. He didn't go to them, but I think he convinced them that they could do it and that they could, you know, pull off an internet strategy and you know, an e-commerce strategy. And I was going to say one thing about PartnerUp. Those guys seem to spend a lot of money advertising. I see their banners everywhere. Yeah. I mean, it's VentureBeat, TechCrunch. I mean, they've got to be spending some pretty serious dough on just paid advertising, let alone all the other stuff they must be doing.
Well, and one of the things that always strikes me is, and we brought this up when we talked about them before, but how much it costs to do a sales call, even if it's a inside salesperson, and reaching out to the small business marketplace has always been a huge challenge for any company that's said we're going to focus on it. And I'm sure that's, I mean, I look at the leverage points they've got with, you know, the PartnerUp small business community, and obviously they're trying to position services for the small business marketplace, but it's not easy.
No, it's a huge amorphous market, or, right. You know, I mean, you see numbers of how many small businesses there are in the United States, and every time I see it, it's like they're all over the place. I mean, is it 20 million? Is it 30 million? What is it? You know, I guess it depends on whether you count solo practitioners, you know, the so-called SOHO, small office, home office people, but it gets into some serious big numbers. And how do you go after a market that big? I mean, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it would seem the social web would be perfect for that.
The what?
The social web. So going after them with social media.
Sure.
Oh, online.
Well, yeah, and that's the there's been a lot of people writing on that topic that really it's small businesses that are finding they can do the social web so much easier and in such low cost. I mean, and we have a guest coming on today that I think hits that in a particular sector of small business that everyone can relate to.
Well, speaking of which, we do have a lot of guests planned for today. Coming up on the entire podcast today, we've got Christopher Lauer will be joining us to talk about Foursquare. We've got a little bit more commentary about some social activities. We got some events coming up, and we also have a new feature called the Startup Spotlight, which we're kind of excited about doing, and we'll be talking with Justin Grammans at Recursive Awesome and about Mobile VidHub. But hey, Liz, before we go to Christopher, though, Steve, can you, I do want to mention that I picked up by dipping my toe in the old Twitter stream the other day that Steve Bent is back at Best Buy. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Does anybody know what he's doing?
From what I can tell, he's working with Best Buy, but he is working out of Seattle, so he's staying on the West Coast.
Well, he moved his family out there, and he's got a kid, one or more, in school. And yeah, I did an interview with him soon after he went out there, and in a way, this doesn't surprise me. He's bailing out of, you know, he did his thing with the Windows launch, and who in the hell would want to work for Microsoft? I'm sorry.
Oh, listen to you. Don't be such a snob.
My friend Doug Olson, for one. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Excuse me, Doug.
And I think Microsoft is his focus at Best Buy. I'm not sure, but this was all just picking things up from comments made. So, but I'm glad that Steve's back. Working towards the betterment of the Minnesota economy.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
we've
from Seattle.
Yes, exactly. I'm anxious to talk with Christopher Lauer. So why don't we get him on? Yeah, and we had the opportunity to see him at the last the Unsummit, where he talked a little bit about Foursquare, and he's writing a book. So it'll be interesting to talk to him.
All right, so I'm adding him to conference.
Interesting. I can't hear the ringing. Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Hey, it's Chris.
Hey, Steve Borsch and Phil and Tim and Graham.
Hey. I got problems with Comcast right now.
Nice timing.
So one big shout out to Comcast Cares. So we got you on your cell phone.
Nice.
Is
this good, or should I go find Wi-Fi?
Oh, I think we're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me step into the office then, where it's a little quieter.
Sounds good. So, Chris, we're kind of excited. We want to talk to you about Foursquare. We want to talk about your plans for your book and that sort of thing. We probably should tell you that Christopher Lauer is one of the principals at Sterling Cross Media, which does a whole lot of social media, PR, and et cetera. So he's no stranger to the social space, and he is writing a book called, tentatively entitled, The Mayor of Everywhere. Is that right, Chris?
It is.
Good.
The only tentative is that we legally we need to make sure we can use Foursquare's name in it. So that's the only thing. We want to secure all that.
Well, that's going to be helpful to have Foursquare in the name of a book about Foursquare. That'll be very helpful.
It is.
Don't you love lawyers?
Oh, yeah.
Well, so tell us what took you to moving down this path, and then let's talk a little bit about Foursquare and your feelings about it.
Sure. The background on how I came to Foursquare was simply as we do look for PR, communication, marketing channels for our clients in the restaurant, retail, hospitality space, I was looking for what would be, if they only had time to use one channel, what channel would that be? And what would be the best social media channel that they could invest their time in? And all of a sudden, Foursquare came along. And I really started looking at Foursquare, and I saw that it was unique because they take the communication tool part of Twitter, so you've got the communication factor there. They take some of the best parts of all of the existing social media channels. So they take the ability to like and or favorite things from Facebook. They take the ability to leave comments like Yelp. They tie it to geolocation, which in the restaurant or retail industry is probably one of the most important factors as they're looking to do business in their neighborhood. And to wrap it all up in a nice little social gaming aspect of it, and then pile in the fact that they already have a pre-existing channel for a business owner to reach out to their customers. So they have an advertising channel built in, and so far this looks like the winner.
What about Facebook would be my biggest question, and their threat, Chris, this is Graham, to launch a similar service, which we're reading is imminent. Apparently, they tried to buy Foursquare, and Foursquare's price was too high, so they're doing their own.
Yeah, the gentleman at Foursquare actually had a lot of stipulations for Facebook that Facebook didn't want to include in their application because of where Foursquare is going to go in their next iterations and the next channels that they have. And Foursquare, yes, it will be. I mean, it is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, being surely the number one tool population-wise. But my biggest, everything that we look at when we take a look at this is, what is the actual behavior of those users on Facebook? And a key factor is that Foursquare, and for people going out to bars and restaurants or going shopping in malls, most people don't Facebook via their phone as much as they do other communication factors or other applications on their phone. Facebook on mobile, it's not quite there yet. And while I do think people will check in, it's interesting because the behavior-wise, yes, there is, how many million, soon to be billion users on Facebook. Not all the population uses all the functions on Facebook. Not everybody's playing Farmville, although it seems like it.
I am not playing Farmville. Never have. Probably never will. Just don't have that kind of time.
Yeah. Well, Chris, you were talking about when you gave the overview at the Unsummit. You had some pretty interesting demographic facts, which I don't have at my fingertips, in terms of trends with Foursquare and the usage.
Actually, I could even bring that up momentarily, but Foursquare was just, I believe yesterday, an article came out that rated the top three growing online application or online programs, and the number one actually surprisingly was Groupon, and then Foursquare followed at a number two, and they're basing this on the pace of how fast of a user growth rate. And I know in May, Foursquare had just hit their 1 million mark in the amount of users. And now they, in literally from May to, I believe, July 1st, they doubled. So they went to 2 million. They have 2 million users right now.
Hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual use of Foursquare. You know, right now, I think you and I have chatted, and it's really kind of a social media geek sort of thing. I mean, it's somewhat narcissistic in the fact that you like to tell people where you are. Of course, you have that option of not telling people where you are, just checking in and playing the game. How many are real, quote unquote, real people using it, Chris? Are you seeing that it is being accepted by a lot of customers of yours and their clientele?
Yes. In fact, I can't share the exact space, but there was a place in Uptown, a restaurant that perhaps has a rooftop, in their recent opening. When they had their recent opening about a month ago, they actually had, 1800 people in their first 2 days. And of those 1800 people, over 800 had checked in on Foursquare.
And what was the, what was the incentive for people to check in at that restaurant?
There was none.
Oh, really? It's just to share their location.
Just their opening weekend. We haven't. We're just now getting a couple campaigns lined up for them to take into this fall via Foursquare. And we have done Foursquare campaigns specifically with clients, but that was why this was astounding to us, is that this was just the sheer volume of people coming to that location, how many checked in versus, you know, how many didn't check in.
Well, can you talk a little bit about Foursquare campaigns and what's effective?
Yep. Foursquare has a unique opportunity for the business owner to actually, and most people don't realize this until you're actually looking at it from a business aspect. If a business can claim their venue, the business, Foursquare has a wealth of data that they actually provide to the users, the business owner users, that they can find out who's checked in, how often, frequency, whether it's male or female. They can find out what hours of the day are their greatest amount of check-ins. There's all sorts of really rich data that's provided on the back end that allows you to see. Case in point, one of our restaurants didn't think that they're just coming up on their year anniversary. They didn't think that they actually had what they thought were plenty of regulars. Actually, when we looked at Foursquare and the behavior behind it, over 2/3 of their check-ins are from people who have been there previously. So they're getting multiple check-ins and repeat business. Campaigns that we're able to do, of course, that's a lot of it's tied into the social gaming aspect. So there is, you know, there's obviously, if you're just a citizen user or not the business user, you are able to go after badges. There's a channel now where retailers or business owners can provide you a special as a mayor, or, you know, you become a mayor on Foursquare. The mayor typifies a person who is, and this has changed. What originally happened, it was the person who'd been there the most times. Now it's the person who's been there the most times in the 30-day period.
Well,
and so
I was just going to add, because what you're talking about is you're talking about a lot of aligned incentives. So clearly for businesses, there's a huge incentive to connect with people and to be able to have the analytics around that and stuff. But you mentioned Yelp. And this is my own gut reaction, and you're significantly more have more expertise than I do in this space. But just from a real high level, I look at Foursquare and Yelp, and I think about payoff. You know, what's my payoff? Well, on Yelp, if I invest effort and energy in Yelp, then I'm adding to the pool of knowledge, perhaps. With reviews and so on, but it's not really connecting me with other people, and it's certainly not really connecting me with the businesses. And Foursquare does. Do you think that, I mean, it's at the core of the differentiation and the value prop and why Foursquare is taking off?
That has been for us. I like to explain it when I'm talking to a prospective client about it. You know, as we started with the ancient traditional and sorry, Phil, but radio, when we started, that was, broadcast formats of marketing. We were pretty much in a one to many type of broadcast and connecting, the one person to the crowd. Social media kind of migrated that a little bit to let the crowds connect to the crowds or people connecting to people. And I like to say that Foursquare is actually connecting people to places, and that even Google has now product pages. So they're actually, for retail, there's people to product, and then there's even a brand new, it's called food spotting, which connects people directly to the food, where instead of checking in the location you're at, you can check in the pasta you're sitting down to eat by taking a photograph and then uploading that online.
Yep.
Well, so you're really you're talking about Foursquare is really, but it used in its purely social way, though, you're connecting people to people to places. I mean, you've got a lot of different things going on because, you're really kind of using the crowd to be your outlet and your fans. So.
And it's also a key factor that we like with Foursquare is that you're driving a behavior of frequency and loyalty, which is something that business to consumer models, they have to have that lifeblood. They have to have repeat customers, and they have to be able to connect to their hard code. If we all saw, Cheers, their Cliff and Norms, they need those two guys at the end of the bar, and they need to be able to market specifically to them. And Foursquare can actually allow them to do that.
Well,
speaking of guys, I've got a major demographic question to ask, Chris. Let's touch on the women aspect and how it's come out that women aren't comfortable, a lot of them, using Foursquare because they don't want people knowing where they are and stalking them. I mean, what's the, give us the demographic breakdown, and is that reported individually to businesses that use Foursquare?
Yes, on the back end, you can clearly see, and yes, we are clearly seeing there are a lot more men than women checking in, which
what's
is very
breakdown?
Interesting.
What is the overall breakdown?
It's about a 75-25. Okay. Men versus women right now, and they're sharing. At least I can pull up an individual location, and I can check the back end right now. And it does, some of it's a little bit better. Some of the locations, which we tend to have a larger women clientele demographic, the women's a little bit higher, but it's not even to a parity point yet. It's nowhere near a 50-50 split.
No. Well, like at that opening in the Uptown Bar, how many of those 800 that checked in were men versus women? Just as one example, do you know right offhand? Or
75-25.
Oh, it was for that particular opening? Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Not that you know that or anything, Chris.
Not that I was looking at the report right now or anything.
No, I wouldn't do that. Not that you would do analytics on this sort of a thing. So, go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've got one last question here. Earlier in the week, Shopkick launched with Best Buy as the major player using it. And that seems to be like, taking this idea of location-based with incentives like coupons and such, but making check-in just simply the act of walking in the door. So what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. You can, if you're actually going to use a strategic campaign with it, how are you going to prevent the people who are just walking by the building from counting as check-ins? And we, with geolocation, Shopkick, I think, is a great idea. I unfortunately have a little bit of issues with their execution. I also know they partnered recently with Southdale.
And with Simon Property.
Yep, and Simon Mall. But I do think, unfortunately, that Simon's not going to give them really what they want. I think it's, I'm not sure it's the right tool, and I don't say that from the aspect of Shopkick. It's the problem and the beast of trying to do cohesive marketing for multiple retailers that may or may not opt into a promotion. I have enough problems with that. Just with a national restaurant chain, if they have franchisees, franchisees can opt out. So it's hard to do a national rollout or even a mall-wide rollout if you have stores that are not participating.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But they're all about the holy grail of giving somebody a coupon on their mobile device as they're in the vicinity of the retail outlet, right? That's what ShopKick is all about.
Yep, ShopKick does that, and Mall of America is using a service called MallTalk that we've taken a look at for clients, and I like MallTalk a little bit better only because they will you can choose your category of what deals or promotions you want to find out about in the mall that day. So if there's a relevant category to you, such as electronics, you can agree to get the electronics offers, and you don't have to be bombarded with the 50% off at jewelry, clothing, and everything else.
Yeah, interesting.
So Chris, as we kind of wind down here, I wanted to ask you just kind of give us an idea on the Foursquare, the book that you're writing. Will it be just a Foursquare based book, or will you talk about things like ShopKick and Yelp and that sort of a thing?
I go through the book is about 9 chapters right now, and 2 of those chapters are dedicated to 1 whole chapter's on other location based new services such as Gowalla and My Town and all of those that have popped up. And then I dedicate an actual chapter to what, you know, everybody assumes is established social media, such as what is Facebook doing in this area? What is Google doing in this area? And honestly, I think Google's poised to leap over everybody just because of their location, their places pages and the extensions that they're already, the infrastructure there for Google. We're just waiting for them to pull the trigger.
So yeah, the book isn't necessarily just about Foursquare, but location based social media in general.
It is location based in general, but I do get into the other 7 chapters are specifically for, and it is tailored towards B2C businesses.
Yeah.
How they can use Foursquare to set up marketing campaigns and how they can use it as a marketing tool. Whereas we'll take a whole chapter and talk about all of the analytics available. We're going to the last chapter of the book, which I keep having to rewrite because things happen so quickly, is what is Foursquare going to look, you know, what is the Foursquare 2.0 going to look like? And that's just been from communications and what they're willing to share with us. At this point, and of course, I have to caveat this whole book with, by the time this is in your hand, some of these may have already happened or some have gone away. Because once the word's on the page, it's kind of stuck there. Yeah.
the problems of writing in the tech space, brother.
Just one last thing I was going to say. When I was looking at other books on these tools, a lot of my complaints were that many of the authors were getting credit for being smart in the space, but yet they were reporting on everyone else's case studies. And I guess one thing that I like to say differentiates what I'm going to do is that we've lived and breathed this actually putting these campaigns in place for our clients. And we're going to have not only national case studies, but we're going to have our own case studies will be out there.
Right.
So I'm hoping people will take it in the vein of this is somebody who's actually done this, and it's relevant for me to know that there are actual business results tied to this.
Yep.
That's so the way to do it.
When can we look for it to hit newsstands or
tentatively, it's going to be in November. It'll be barnesandnoble.com for sure and amazon.com for sure that I know of.
Just in time for Christmas gift giving.
Just in time.
Who's your publisher, Chris?
It's Happy About, the same company works with
Julio.
Mr. Julio.
Yep. Yeah, cool. Great
fabulous.
Outfit.
Yep. Fabulous.
Well, good luck. We'll look forward to seeing it.
Absolutely. And Christopher, I'll put links to your stuff in the show notes because we don't want people to Google you and inadvertently go to Dr. Christopher Lower's bowel formula.
No, I want to go and punch him, you know.
So
I keep hoping I'm going to knock him out of the top 10 listings, but I can't.
All right. Hey, thanks for being on, pal.
No problem.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Take care.
Yep. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Well, that was great.
So, yeah, that's how, you know, I remember going to a Gowalla little gathering when I was at South by Southwest, 2-3 years ago. And there were a lot of excitement around the Gowalla thing, but it seems that they really have gotten left in the dust by Foursquare.
Yeah, Gowalla was kind of the first mover, and they did get overtaken, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so it's also going to be interesting to see what happens just from a big macro trend perspective when you look at what Starbucks is doing with their portal. You know, is that going to have any impact on if the big guys all do their own thing and don't necessarily participate as businesses in a big way in Foursquare or other services, is that going to potentially be the big trend?
That's a good point.
Facebook staring down the barrel of doing something location based, I mean, they will definitely have the leg up over anybody because of the sheer amount of audience that they can reach quickly.
Right.
And it's a familiar name. And because I think that we always get concerned about so many different tools that are out there. You know, the consumer's mind is going to say, I can't handle all of these different tools. I need one that does it all. So it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out.
Well, we've got
speaking of all these different tools, I just wanted to comment on this, and I kind of laughed about this pretty much all week because people keep bringing it up and it keeps showing back up in the universe, social universe. The Twitter button,
yes.
the Twitter share button. Oh, I have never seen so much hoopla about a stinking button doing something that has already been done by so many people.
Well, isn't it just a comeback to the Facebook like button? And that got a huge amount of play too. But I mean, I see it as just this, you know, it's their answer to the Facebook like button.
But there are so many services out there already offering the ability to share via Twitter, and it's just kind of funny.
But it's unofficial bootleg. It's not the official one.
Yes, exactly. It's the official one.
The official one's got to be better.
It's sanctioned by the NFL.
Right.
But I'll take a look at a service like Share This, and if I'm going to implement something, it's not going to be a separate Facebook like button or a Twitter button. It's going to be something that allows people to do a multitude of different things. And I did have Share This on Minovate, but we were running so many other things concurrently that I was having some conflicts and I ended up turning it off. But, letting people, you know, post to wherever they want to or email or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Then doesn't that make more sense to have one Share This button that covers all these services?
Well, it also comes down to that whole concept of there's so many services out there. I mean, maybe this is just Twitter saying, okay, we're going to be one of the big players.
Yeah, right.
We're going to be one of the services. So we got to have our own button.
Yep.
Yeah. Share This is kind of messy too. You know, I mean, you click on it, you get this big pop-up thing. I mean, you know, I like what the Twitter exec said about why they did this. It's just to facilitate faster tweeting, you know?
Yeah.
And it will. And I'm all for that. I mean, I'm getting tired of having to do 3, 4, 5 clicks, cut and paste, this, that, and the other to do tweets. You know, I just want to get on with it. And
I hate following those slow tweeters. Those guys.
Oh God. Oh,
slow
geez.
Tweeters.
Yeah, you know, I mean, anything that speeds the process is going to get adopted.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm not able to. Believe me, I can't process all this information already. Yeah, I need it faster. That's what
we need more. We need more tweets.
More.
Well, speaking of somebody that jumped on trends with platform, why don't you? Should we just bring him on, Justin Grammons?
Sure. We're kind of launching a little feature here on the Minovate podcast called the Startup Spotlight, and we want to spotlight startups in and around the Minnesota and Minneapolis area and in Minnesota here in the land of 10,000 lakes. That's what we do, and so we thought we'd start today with a friend of the show, Justin Grammons, who started Recursive Awesome. They do mobile and web development here in the Twin Cities, but they're also launching Mobile Vid Hub, which is one of their applications. And so I thought we'd get those guys on, get Justin on to talk a little bit about that. So
that sounds great. Well, why don't I add him now and we can chat with him about what he's up to.
Sounds like a deal to me.
Mobile Vid Hub looks really interesting.
Yeah, and I think that the combining of obviously two very hot things, mobile and video. So, Justin, how are you, brother?
Hey, how you doing, Phil? Good.
How you doing? This is Steve, and on with us is, of course, Phil and Tim Elliott and Graham Thickens.
Yo.
Hey. Hey.
Hi, guys.
Well, Justin, you know, you're the first startup to be highlighted in this, the Minovate Gang Startup Spotlight. There should be music of some kind here, but
I'm very honored.
How's that?
Tell us a little bit about first Recursive Awesome, and then let's talk a little bit about Mobile Vid Hub.
Sure. Recursive Awesome was formed about a year ago. I'm the co-founder with my business partner Sam Schroeder, we founded it working in the mobile space. Both of us have been doing contracting and stuff like that on our own. We both had our own companies, and we found ourselves going in to bid on projects together. And it was kind of confusing to the person who wanted to have the work done. Be like, well, who's doing the work, Justin or Sam or both of you guys? You guys are both going to be working together, but you guys don't really have one entity together. So we found ourselves working on a number of projects together, and we're like, hey, you know, I think it would make sense for us to form this company together. And we've been working a lot with mobile on iPhone and Android, and then back-end web services. That's kind of what our forte is. But one of the core things that we did besides consulting, just to kind of keep the lights on and stuff like that, is to start working in new technologies and try and build our own products. And that's the end game for Recursive Awesome, is to actually have products that we have built in-house ourselves that we're maintaining and supporting, and looking for new and innovative ideas to continue to kind of build on what we want to do. And most of the stuff that we want to do is in the mobile space, but maybe not. We're actually working on some other stuff right now that we're kind of keeping under the radar that is not in the mobile space. So we're very much interested in anything related to startup companies and related to tech, anything stuff related to technologies and areas we can be innovative and kind of come up with new products and ideas. And Mobile Vid Hub is kind of, the first thing that the public has seen so far.
Well, tell us a little bit about what Mobile Vid Hub is all about and what platform does it run on, et cetera. So give us the 411.
Give you the quick elevator pitch, I guess. And I can tell you kind of where the ideas came out of. When we first started Recursive Awesome, actually probably even prior to that, I had been approached by some clients wanting to do mobile video basically on iPhone and Android and BlackBerry devices. And their idea was very simple. Basically, one guy was a golf instructor, and he said, I want to have my videos on these devices, and I'll give you 3 or 4 videos. Let's just put an app on the App Store, and people can download this app and they can watch my videos. And that's all he really wanted. And so I started thinking about that. Well, I thought, okay, that's not too hard to do at all. It's pretty basic. It's kind of limiting. There's a lot more other things you could do. And about that same time, we had started talking with a company called the Solstice Film Festival, and they do a local film festival here in Minneapolis on the Solstice here in June. And they had the same idea. They said, look, we have some videos. We just want to put out an app that has some videos on there. And Sam and I kind of put our heads together and started thinking about it. And we said, there is probably a product here that a lot of people are going to want to have done. And we could sit here and grab videos and put them on the phone. That's one thing. But it would be, probably a lot more to our advantage to build something that kind of has some bells and whistles to it, something that we can repurpose and reuse and sell to other clients, and basically, start building a product and add in some more features to it. So we came up with this concept of Mobile Vid Hub, and it's essentially a back-end video service where you can manage your own videos. So instead of them giving us the videos, they upload the videos through a website. They have a administration interface where they can choose if they want to have the videos be featured or not, because that's one of the things that Solstice kind of wanted, was to be able to choose which videos show up in the particular ordering, because we have a featured section at the top. So they can upload their videos. We host the videos for them. we're using Amazon's S3 service for that, and that doesn't cost too much money. And we essentially just pass that on with, of course, a little bit of, you know, markup because we're all in business. So we provide this hosting service for your videos. We provide a management service for allow you to manage your videos. And you can also get, then you start opening up the world of who's watching your videos and you know, the whole concept of statistics and which videos are most popular, where are people at geographically when they're watching your videos. And then you start adding in things like, well, let's do some social stuff. So let's think about how people can actually comment on videos or rate videos. So we put these features in there, and you know, it's on a video by video basis. So the client or the customer can choose, I want to have this video be rateable or commentable, or not. So they can kind of turn that on and off through the back end site. We created the whole concept around video, but we said, well, what if people want to do other stuff on this thing? What if I am Solstice Film Festival and I want to be able to start tweeting, and essentially allowing people to follow me through this app? So we added another tab on the app, which is essentially the Twitter stream of the customer. So the Solstice Film Festival, they have their own Twitter stream that they're tweeting out right now today. So we didn't need to build, this is another an idea that I think of in terms of startup, in terms of, you know, reusing existing services that are out there today. That's one of the things you want to do when you're doing startups, is kind of being lean and mean. And instead of us building our own messaging platform, we decided to actually integrate, the Twitter timeline right into the app.
Well, that's always a good idea, not to go out and try to reinvent the wheel. You know, you don't need to build your own social network when you can be part of one that already exists and already has bodies like a Facebook. And why do a messaging service when Twitter is already out there? So, it's a great idea.
Well, so Justin, I have a question about specifically around the selection of videos and what gets into the app in terms of being fed by the content management system, the CMS. Because a big buzz, a big meme on the net, of course, is curation, that I personally know of a lot of people who are taking specific spaces and they're out looking for the number one thought leaders in that particular space who are perhaps doing videos and then aggregating those on a site. Is anything like that? Do you have any algorithms built in to be able to pull up or suggest content to a customer who then is going to feed it through to the app, or is it manual? How's the selection process done?
Well, the selection process is done by the person who bought the app from us. Okay. So the guys at Solstice Film Festival, they got a bunch of, they do continue to get in a bunch of videos on pretty much a weekly basis of things that want to be submitted to their film festival. And they choose out the ones that they like and upload them through the back end web service. And then anybody who can download their app for free, and it's called Movie On Go, is what they decided to name their app. Because again, the customer, quote unquote, you know, is Solstice Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And they have complete control over the content. And if anybody wants to, you know, see what content that they have, they just download the Solstice Film Festival app. So it's a way for Solstice Film Festival to essentially brand themselves through an app. But then they also have control over what videos are going to be on that app. Does that make sense?
Customers can basically be their own YouTube.
Yes. Yes. Right. Customers can be their own YouTube, and there's no, this isn't, I mean, currently the way that it's built right now is there's no recommendation engine. I can't push a video up into Solstice Film Festival, all that sort of stuff.
So do you have an online partner with this too? I mean, as far as, it's a mobile VidHub is a mobile video concept. I mean, does it have a sister website as well?
In terms of actually being able to watch this content, that was a thought that we had. We could basically open it up, and basically, if you're a customer of Mobile VidHub and you're using the Mobile VidHub platform, we could aggregate all the mm-hmm. videos together to a website. Mm-hmm. So no, we haven't done that right now yet.
So it's strictly focused on mobile and video to go, pretty much.
Yep, but you know what? It's also I like to tell people that it's, but the video portion is somewhat optional because we have the Twitter stream. We also have another tab on the app that basically allows people to submit their email address back and to find out more information. So it's kind of a way for them to online sign up through the app. And Solstice, again, they wanted to collect email addresses. And so we added another tab on there, which is a page for them to sign up for their newsletter. We added another tab on there that's just their website. So it's the Solstice Film Festival website. So from right within the app, we just use the mobile browser, keep them in the app to kind of keep that experience of still being in the Movie On Go app, and they can browse this, the website. And the last tab that we added is kind of an About tab, which, and these are all the tabs that anybody who signs up for Mobile VidHub will get. They'll get all these tabs. We can take off tabs if you don't want to have video, if you're not related to video and you want to have everything else but the video, easy enough to do, you know. But we created another tab, which is an About tab, that they can control all the content on that page. So it can be like, you know, they control that through the back end website. So there's no change that needs to have to happen through the app. They essentially are able to say, you know, we have a film festival coming out. Now we're doing, you know, now the film festival is going to be happening in, we're going to have one going on in December, for example, or, you know, be sure to submit your digital shorts by this specific date. They can push that stuff out. They can also, of course, push it out through Twitter, but this is just a separate tab that allows them to have kind of full control the way they want to have it look and be presented to the user from within the app and not have to do any updates.
One of the use cases that I think about immediately, actually two, one is Gary Vaynerchuk's Wine Library TV, just to have everything available at your fingertips, but also somebody like Will It Blend, the Blend Tech blender, where the CEO grinds things up in the blender, like an iPad, you know, and golf balls and so forth. But it's one thing to have them aggregate everything on a blog, but they don't really have a mobile strategy. And this would be absolutely perfect for somebody like that.
Yep. I mean, we've been trying to talk to larger companies too. I think there's also a good niche in terms of education. And we saw with the golf instructor that I talked about, people that want to show videos, show training, even something like, you know, I've had thoughts of going to Home Depot and talking to them about, you know, putting, how do you install a light switch, you know, or how do I fix this, that, or the other thing. And you have a Home Depot app that essentially streams that video down. Oh, and by the way, here's the nearest Home Depot. You know, we can easily add another tab on there that is basically the location of the Home Depot near you. So any kind of idea where you want to actually train somebody, educate them, I think, you know, show them, you know, how you do things, I think I think we have a good niche in that area.
Yep.
So how long does it take to get your app actually created and in the stores?
A lot of it is dependent on Apple. With Android, the turnaround time is really quick. We need to get, you know, usually from the person, we need to get a splash screen, some sort of artifact that they want, because that's usually what happens when you start up the app. We'll show them a splash screen. Usually on their about page that we have, we usually have their logo, some sort of information, but, you know, that'll take a day or so. But once we get that information from them, the turnaround time is within a couple of days. We can push it out to Apple and wait for the approval. And start waiting for Apple. And then, but with Android, it's pretty much ready to go.
Justin, so I got a couple of questions. Is this Solstice Film Festival a Minneapolis client?
Yes, it is.
And how long have they had their app out there? And do they have both iPhone and Android now?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, okay. They have both iPhone and
Android. How long and how many users have they attracted? Have they done a lot to promote it?
I'm not exactly sure if they've done a lot to promote it. I do know that they have tweeted about it. They have put it on their website. Their film festival happened just once a year in June, and this past June. It's not when we launched it. We launched it the previous June. So June of 09 is when we launched it.
Okay.
So, and again, you know, the customer, Solstice in that case, they have a private login. They can see how many people have been downloading their app and all that sort of stuff. You know, we could get that information from them, but we've kind of been hands off. We've been like, you know, here's your app, let you guys promote it. Let us know how it goes. And from my understanding, it's been going really well.
Good.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Justin, I hope it goes well. We're excited that it's out there and glad you're pushing along. And are you happy with the way Recursive Awesome is building?
Yes. We've got 6 employees now. So
yeah, Damon,
from an idea that we had.
Damon Allison, I see, joined your firm, the man about town.
Yeah. Well, we worked with Damon before on a couple of projects, yeah. so it was a great fit.
Yeah, he's a good man. Yep.
Very
so
nice.
So from us to go from, you know, Sam and I to 4 other guys here in the past, you know, year, it's going well. It's going well. We're happy.
And you got a nice client list. Yeah.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Nice job. Congratulations, man. And thanks very much for being the first Startup Spotlight.
Well, thank you. No, I enjoy your guys' podcast.
There's no plaque with that or anything. So.
Bragging rights on Twitter.
Bragging rights on Twitter.
There you go. Yeah, right.
You're using that. So thanks, Justin.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Bye-bye. Before we wrap up for the day, guys, let's talk about some upcoming events. Graham, what do you got on your calendar?
Nothing.
Come on.
I saw the barbecue spelled C-U-E.
Yes, the mini barbecue.
Mini barbecue. I don't know if that has, does that have some deep meaning? Like
maybe cue, there's some pool going on.
Cue the pool table. Right. When is that? Late August?
August 22nd. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And my only question is I'll go if they have air conditioning.
Jeez.
In Maple Grove.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to stand outside over a hot fire in 98 degree heat index, but. Hopefully the weather will calm down by then.
Tim, you got anything on your calendar?
No, we're getting set to drive my son to college. So that's the big thing for next week.
Tim Elliott stars in College Road Trip Midwest.
Yeah. Well,
where are you headed? Driving
out east to Washington, D.C.
What school?
American University.
Wow.
Wow.
You got to be smart to get in there.
You do.
Good.
Congratulations. That'll be fun.
He got it from mom, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And Steve, your calendar, what's it hold?
Well, nothing in the near term, but there is something that I think people that are interested need to sign up for before it gets filled up, and that's WordCamp MSP, which is happening November, 13th, I think?
Get registered now.
Get registered now. No, seriously, because here's been the big shift. I think I might have mentioned that there were over 50,000 people in printing and publishing in the Twin Cities in the mid-90s or late 90s when I was at Apple. And I called the woman who's the director of the Printing Industry of Minnesota Association, and that number is less than half right now.
Wow.
So it's dropped dramatically, as one could imagine, in the printing space. But guess what? All those people who have skills in page layout and design and graphic design and image work and Illustrator and all of these tools are still around. You know, a lot of them are painting houses and doing other kinds of work. But the point is that those are the kind of people, as these tools become better and better, which I would argue WordPress is today, there is an enormous opportunity for anyone who's in the creative space to really vault forward in a big way. So I think this could be a really good, I think this is going to surprise WordPress, Automattic, and Matt Mullenweg and the community about how big this one turns out to be.
Which one?
This WordCamp MSP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to put them on the map, huh?
I think so. Just like social media breakfast.
There you go.
People are like, what the hell? The Twin Cities?
We also have the 140 road trip. Mr. Pulver is coming through town. A big 140 road trip tweet up August 26th. You can check that out as well. As he, you know, winds his way across the country talking about life in 140 characters.
That's right. A paid event, I assume.
No, I don't think so. No.
Oh, it's a freebie.
It's a freebie. It's a tweet up.
God, it's not, yeah, it's got a big venue.
Yeah. Well,
where's he doing it?
That has yet to be announced.
Oh, okay.
It's on the actual site. It says those that sign up will be told where we're meeting.
Huh. Probably end up being Best Buy or something.
Probably so. Probably
he has a relationship with them, I think, yep, or did. Exactly. Last year he was here and talked to them. And...
Wow.
But that's all I got. That's what's coming up for me. So,
guys. Well, we got social media breakfast coming up, right?
At the State Fair.
At the State Fair. And time and place to be announced. And the startup weekend is happening in September.
That's right.
That's a national movement, right?
Yes, it is. It is.
We're having that's been going on in other locales for a long time, and
yes,
and somebody finally succeeded in getting them to come here. I assume
exactly.
Like, or they just set it up here. Yeah.
Well, just like
or it's just an unconference. Okay, so there's not a personality behind it that comes to town.
I don't think so. No. I mean, most of the speakers that have been announced are great speakers. You know, people like Robert Stevens and you know that sort of thing. So, but they're local speakers.
Okay.
So that'll be happening.
That'll be occurring right about the time of that Rain Source Capital event, which they call the Rainmakers Conference. It might be the same darn week.
Which is a paid event this year, is that right?
Yeah, that's paid. And yeah. A lot of entrepreneurs have expressed to me they're probably not going because the price is too high. I think it's the same as what the angels pay. So I think it's probably only going to be further along startups that are anteing up for that one.
Yeah.
Whereas all the newbies will be flocking to startup weekend, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Well, we'll see.
All right.
Good. I think that's about it. Other than that, it's I'm done with the majority of my fixes from the WordPress redirect hack and attack. And Tim, I don't know if you had to go through a lot, but I was cleaning out database. Thanks for your help, by the way. But I was cleaning out databases and changing files. And, oh, my God, it was unbelievable. Yikes. Just unbelievable. Wow. So I'm a real believer in cybersecurity and all of that. And I promise I'll stop hacking into your machine, Graham. And digging through your personal files.
Did WordPress get hacked or your hoster get hacked or what?
Well, it's kind of Media Temple is claiming no, that it wasn't their fault. And others are saying there was some other way that this thing jumped from account to account over the hosted space, the grid service. And then others were saying no, it came in from perhaps plugins that hadn't been updated or themes or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it's, nobody's really sure where what the vectors were for the attack, but, all
the
I know
finger
is
pointing of the cloud. Don't you love it?
Yeah. All I know is instead of a new lock on my front door, I have an M1 tank sitting in the driveway right now relative to how I've secured my WordPress installs and put together. I've had to tattoo the password on my butt so I can, so I remember it because it's, it's just, man. Anyway.
And then you got to stand in front of a mirror to read the password backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what was that password?
Why is Boris pulling his pants down again?
The visual.
Yeah, no, we don't want to go there. All right, guys.
All right, guys. I got to go
yep.
Clean up limbs.
All right.
Oh, man.
All right. Yeah. Take care, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
Have a good week.
Yep. Take care.
Good weekend.
Bye-bye.
The guitar down, get a real job and a haircut now. Mama prayed that I'd be safe from the devil's music running in my veins. I said, don't y'all worry, I'm gonna be a rock and roll star. Gonna make $1 million playing this mean guitar. Well, they're calling me scary. He said, how you gonna feed my petite Jolie Belle? By playing this guitar like a bat out of hell. Someday I'll put your daughter in a brand new Cadillac car. We're gonna live on love in a red hot mean guitar. They call me Mean Gene cause they say I play a mean guitar. Texas bars.